We interrupt this regular scheduled programming to bring you this historic Pacifica Radio interview with former President George W. Bush.
We got a great show for you tonight, my friends. Special guest, top of the hour, exclusive. He's crisscrossing the country. He's doing Oprah. He's doing the Today Show. He's doing every show on Fox, obviously. But he's here with us tonight, my friends. The 43rd President of the United States of America. Yes, it is George W. Bush. Mr. President, how are you?
Hey, it's real great to be with you. I appreciate you having me on. Promote decision points, answer some questions.
How's the tour? How's the book tour going?
Well, it's actually going real well. Yeah, I've been on most every Fox channel. Yeah, that's a lot of that's my audience, but I appreciate having me on your show. We're number one on the New York Times bestseller list. I'm grateful for that, and I couldn't be more happy.
Now, the rumor is, though, that you did not write any of the book, but only posed on the cover of the book cover. Is that correct? Did you write?
That's not totally true. Way it works is you sit down with these ghost writers,
right?
And you tell basically, they'd ask me some questions, I'd tell them the story,
mm-hmm.
and they put it in better words than I could. So I never really wrote anything down, but
right.
They did ask me, they asked me about this and that, they just transcribe it. And since I'm on KPFT, I feel like we should. I want to be honest. I got to say, I didn't get to be so honest in Decision Points. I definitely want to, answer any questions you have. Honestly, if there's something
All right. Here's a question that has come up time and time again. The Iraq War, you told the American people, you told the United Nations, you told our allies that Saddam Hussein was sitting on a stockpile of some of the most destructive weapons of mass destruction man has ever created. It turns out he did not have a thimble of mustard gas or a shot glass of VX nerve agent. So the question becomes, where is the weapons of mass destruction, or were you just lying for other reasons?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't call it any type of outright lie. I would like to call it, it was a faith-based decision that we made, that my administration made. And we certainly knew that we didn't have any intel that he had weapons. But we needed to create, the scenario. We needed to create what we thought he had. So we really, we really did think he had mobile weapons left. But, obviously it was, we had animators draw those.
Right.
And we hoped that after we got in there, we'd go in, we'd find the weapon. We were 99% sure that that's how it was going to go. Now, I say 99 because there's always 1% margin for error, which is what happened.
Right. So you thought he had weapons. You prayed upon that he would have weapons, and your prayers were not answered. Is that correct?
Well, no, that's not true. My prayers were answered.
Okay.
And, I prayed on it hard. A lot of us in the White House prayed. And, it turned out I was told that he had weapons.
Right.
So I'm not sure exactly, I wonder, who was I talking to?
Did God tell you he had weapons, too, when you prayed?
Well, yeah.
Are you upset with God that he might have misled you?
Well, I'm not going to say I'm upset. I'm just a little confused, maybe disappointed. I'd like to say I remain faithful as I can be.
Right. So what does that say to the faith-based community? Pray less and read more?
Well, I want people to make their own, conclusions.
I mean, Mr. President, you prayed to God, you prayed to Jesus, you prayed for weapons of mass destruction. You were utterly wrong in your prayers and your estimations. At some point, do you question God's existence and maybe that Jesus steered you down the wrong path?
I never could say this in office, but yeah, in all honesty, I do question, I certainly question my faith now. And, I had to sit down one night and I said to Laura, I said, if here I am, a faithful man, if I'm the most powerful man on the planet, and I'm praying to God, and I'm getting answers back, and they turn out to be wrong, and you know, things I'm praying for are, go unheard, then it makes me wonder, you know, is there a God? The conclusion I come up with is there's absolutely not. You know, it was an invention. But I still remain faithful.
Let me ask you about 9/11. Certainly a dark day in America's history. You certainly benefited from it. The first question I have, at the school, when you were told that America was under attack, to the average observer, you looked like a chicken with his head cut off. What was going through your mind when Andy Carr told you that, Mr. President, we're under attack?
Yeah, I actually remember that very vividly, and I didn't get to, you know, elaborate on it in the book as much as I would have wanted to. Basically, Andy came up to me, and when he, you know, when he told me about the tower, he said, you know, first he said, he holds up this sign and says, you know, don't tell anyone yet. And then, at first I thought, you know, certainly he's going to come back to me and he's going to say, no, I made a mistake. It didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's, you know, a couple minutes long where I just thought, I'm sure, I was like in a state of denial.
Did you pray? And, did you pray at that point?
Well, no, not at that point. Not till later, you know. But again, I never did have any real answers that were helpful in that area.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that I thought was, you know, I hope someone else fixes this. I'd always felt like, you know, I hired a good team to come in with me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I had a great administration. And this is one of the reasons I hired them is because, you know, when there was a big decision like this, hopefully they would, you know, they'd handle it.
Well, they messed you up on the Iraq War. They messed you up on 9/11. They messed you up on Katrina. To the average observer, it seemed like your team sucked.
Well, you know, I think they're all, yeah, you know, I think they're all good people. I just think that
your vice president shot a man in the face. How is he a good person?
Well, that's, you know, I get a lot of jokes about that. You know, Cheney, he is a violent man, and it certainly never surprised me. You know, one of the things I talk about in the book is how, you know, there's a, you know, I don't want to get into it. It's a difficult story about, you know, I had a, you know, a miscarried sibling in a jar. My mom showed me in a jar. You know, in a way, it prepared me for working with Cheney. You know, the man has all kinds of human parts in jars in his own office. And I guess I wasn't even shocked by it. And that's just, you know, that's just Dick. That's how it works.
Yeah, I read, yes, that he keeps his heart in a jar of formaldehyde, but I could be wrong. Maybe you can shed some light on that.
Well, that's not his heart, but I, you know, I don't want to get into his stories.
What about, getting back to 9/11, how do you go from 9/11, Bin Laden, and then connected to Saddam Hussein? That for a lot of people, when I say a lot of people, 99% of the world, that made no sense.
Well, I appreciate that question. First of all, one of the things, when I got elected, for one of the first things I, you know, even when I was running, I talked about I want to go back to Iraq and want to go and finish a job. And, you know, we'd already been working on it even before 9/11, getting ready for the invasion. So, you know, when 9/11 happened, it just turned out to be somewhat of a convenient situation.
You know, there's a lot of talk amongst some of the fringe elements of society, but it's out there that you actually were behind 9/11, you and your administration, that you need a new Pearl Harbor. You concocted these planes to fly into buildings, allegedly. What do you say to those folks that think that you actually were behind the attacks of September 11th?
Yeah. There certainly could be a case made for that if 9/11 didn't happen. You know, maybe we would have had to manufacture something because we definitely wanted, you know, this was a, at the time, I thought, a necessary war. Turned out not to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when it comes down to it, 9/11 was, you know, it happened the way it happened.
Well, let's face it, it was a godsend for your administration. I mean, your poll numbers went up.
I call it a lucky break, even though, you know, and that's not to say, you know, I feel bad about all the lives we lost, but, you know, a lucky break for what we wanted.
Right, right. What can you tell us about Karl Rove? He seems the embodiment of evil. I know you used to call him Turd Blossom when you were mad at him. Was there any time in the White House where you took
that's
him
actually, out? Hold on, I got here. That's actually not true. I didn't call him Turd Blossom because I was mad at him. I called him Turd Blossom. Most people don't know this, by the way. It's not in the book. It's because it makes it so your crap don't stink. He can take any candidate. You take all the dirt out, all the dirty laundry. And Karl Rove whitewashed it, turned it in some beautiful white sheets.
Ah, very nice. I did not realize that about Mr. Rove. Do you think he and Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney, I mean, why didn't you crack down on them about the Valerie Plame outing? I mean, this was a woman who was dedicating her life to public service, to protecting not just you and me, but everybody against terrorist attacks. Why didn't you come down like you said you were and fire Rove and fire Libby and fire Cheney and fire everyone who was involved in it? It seems like you went back on your word.
Well, you know, I may have it in some way, but, you know, it hurts you to work against the people helping you. And Scooter Libby was, he took the fall for us, and he was helpful. And, you know, I think it goes against moral human nature when someone's helping you out like that, to go, hey, we're going to lock him up for it. We're going to leave his sentence. We're going to, you know, leave him locked up. When, in good conscience, I couldn't do that to a fellow American. Scooter Libby took a tremendous amount of criticism and saved, you know, me and Rove Rumsfeld. Saved a lot of us from, certainly saved Cheney from jail. And, you know, the man, America owes him a debt of gratitude.
For keeping you and your rest of your administration out of jail.
Hey, in all fairness, you cannot have a president, you know, doing jail time.
That is true.
And you don't want the smoking gun to be a turd blossom.
That's right.
Well, you know, I wouldn't say it that way, although Rove probably would.
Right. What did you think about Colin Powell? Is he a traitor to you and your administration?
I had nothing but incredible respect for Colin Powell, as did, I would say, the rest of the country, which is why, you know, he was the perfect guy to sell the story to the people. No one else could have done that the way that Colin Powell did.
So we're back.
I think we owe him a debt of gratitude as well.
We're back to the beginning of the interview, which is, You knowingly lied to the United Nations and the American people and the rest of the world. Is what basically Colin Powell told your lies that you told him to tell.
Yeah, and I can tell this now, I think, without worrying about too much. But, you know, in all honesty, the man thought he was doing the right thing. You know, we promised him it was all true. And then, I think we really let him down. So I still feel bad about it sometimes, but, you know, he's a good man.
Okay, you're listening to the Other Side radio program. On the line, and we're going to take your calls in just a minute, the president or former president of the United States, George W. Bush. I have some couple more questions I want to ask you. I want to ask you about Florida. I want to ask you about the 2000 election. Would you at least now admit that you did not democratically was elected president, and the fact that your father's friends on the Supreme Court basically appointed you president back in 2000.
I'm glad that now I can admit that, and as a matter of fact, you know, I think that's been public knowledge for some time. I think most Americans were aware of what was going on. Now, I did get elected the second time. You know, I was elected in 2004.
Right.
And I feel like that justifies the first time.
So if you get elected the first time, which is really the second time, it makes up for the appointment of the first time.
Yeah, I think the second time getting elected makes up for the first appointment.
I got you. I understand. Did you have any regrets the fact that you came in second place? Did it bother you that you were appointed?
Well, no, because perception is reality. And,
right.
And people, once I took charge, you know, people saw me, certainly after 9/11 as well, people accepted the fact that I was in charge.
Let's talk about
now you can't argue with that.
Well, let's talk about some of the domestic issues. You know, in the news is your tax cut. It's about to expire in 2001, or the one that you wrote in 2001 is about to expire at the end of this month. People would say that this was just a massive giveaway to the wealthiest of the wealthy, including you and your family. What do you say to those critics that said, you know, you inherited a surplus, you passed an utterly irresponsible tax cut, it did nothing to stimulate the economy, you had the worst job growth record of any president in modern history. What do you say to those that said you're utterly irresponsible and that your only domestic achievement was helping to bankrupt this country?
You know, first of all, I think critics aren't aware of the power of trickling down. And what we got going on here is, you know, people who just aren't seeing the trickle fast enough. And I certainly don't think my administration is necessarily to blame for all of that. I'd say, you know, 85-90%.
So I guess for us that are not, you know, smart enough to understand economics, how do you cut government revenue but increase government spending?
Well, it is a good question. I would have done that. I would have raised taxes had I not promised. You know, I said, I'm not going to do what my dad did. I'd rather have America fail than go back on my word to the American people, because I see it as I love America.
You're an honorable man, sir, I must say.
Well, I feel like I've kept my honor.
You certainly have. Katrina, I guess Brownie did not do a heck of a job. Why, with all the resources of a government, why did those people have to wait so long to be rescued? The government was nowhere to be found. I mean, you cannot tell us that that was not an abject, utter failure of leadership on your part.
Some people say that there was racism involved with my slower response to Katrina. And I want to clear that up right now, because I think that's where you're going with it. And the way it works is this. I am not a racist. I do not discriminate based on color, but I do discriminate. I discriminate against people not in my group. And I will say this, that, you know, my group is the group I like to be with. You know, more, you know, people with money, people who have some sort of status.
So what you're saying is if a hurricane hit Beverly Hills, you'd be on that like white on rice, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, I don't know if I'm a big fan of of Beverly Hills. I am a fan of, if it hit somewhere in Texas, you can guess that, you know, I certainly would have been there, within a few hours. I definitely would not have continued to play guitar and, you know, have fun on stage. If it was Texas, I would have been there.
What is your greatest achievement as president, and what was your greatest failure?
I think my greatest achievement is yet to be seen. Yeah. And I think, I hope it's, Iraq in 50 years. And so I'm going to wait for history to be the judge of that.
How does it feel? Well, let me ask you this. What was your greatest failure?
Well, in present time, I would say Iraq, because the intel turned out to be wrong on that.
No, the intel was right. You were wrong.
Well,
that's what you said earlier.
I mean the intel I got from prayer.
Ah, I got you.
I didn't go through personally. I did not go through the intel we got from the government, because I don't believe you trust the government.
But
say trust in God.
But Mr. President, you were the government for 8 years. So
I don't think of it that way. I think of I was working against the government to bring the government down.
Before we get, we only have a few more minutes, Mr. President. I want to get a couple of calls from the listeners. What do you say to the historians that overwhelmingly see you as the worst president in American history?
I say, talk to people in Albania, which is a country that I've been to, and it's a country where I have to this day a 96% approval rating, and you can Google that.
That's excellent.
I talk to the people of Albania, and why is it, first of all, 18 million Albanians can't be wrong. No. They know something that I think the American people have been too quick to judge about.
Okay. Well, Mr. President, we have a few more minutes. You have time to take a couple calls?
I do. I'll be glad to take a couple calls.
Okay, hold on. Lisa, you're on the air with Mr. George W. Bush, former president. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
Mr. President, I applaud you for going on KPFT and looking at your mistakes. And Mr. President, I sincerely hope you find your faith again. Now, to me, and to many people I'm sure listening on KPFT, it's utterly despicable that you lied to the American people and lied to Colin Powell. My question for you, sir, is how did you make it okay? How did you make it right in your own mind and make it okay in your conscience? In your conscience, how, sir, did you sleep at night?
Well, I thank you for that question, and you know that is a that's a great question, and it comes simply comes down to this: to answer how do I how do I get through the day? I simply had a 3x5 note card, and it said everything I do for America. If I did something wrong, you know, I did it for America. And as to how I sleep at night, you know, I am on a product called Ambien. And I've actually never, since I started it, never had a problem. I was one of the first people to test out Ambien before it was released to the public. And it's worked great, and it continues to work.
Mr. President, thank you for your candor. I really appreciate it. And I just want you to know that God does exist, sir. And, this is just another point in your life where you're going to have to go inside and find him again. That's all. And you'll come out the other side. That's all. And I'm a dyed-in-the-wool, yellow dog, Democrat, liberal.
Amen.
God bless you, sir.
Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you, Lisa.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate that. And, you know, I appreciate the support on my faith. And I do want to, I feel like I'm trying to remain faithful.
All right.
But, you know, and certainly just in realizing that it's very likely that, you know, that maybe there is nothing out there. And certainly my prayers weren't heard. It's a challenge for me, but I'm going to continue to, think on it.
Joe, you're on the other side. How are you, Joe?
Howdy, great. Thank you very much, and very nice to talk to you, Mr. President. I am curious, what's Laura up to nowadays?
Laura's been raising birds. We're in Dallas now, not terribly far from the KPFT studio.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing real good. She's spending some time at my new library. So she's doing real good, though. I appreciate you asking.
Seth, you're on the other side with President George W. Bush.
Mr. Bush?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I have one lingering question. You have 90% of the world's product of heroin being manufactured and distributed throughout the world. Does the United States control the movement of heroin into this country, and do they market it?
Well, that's a good question. You know, certainly know, some people know this, some people may not. My father was in the CIA and happened to regulate some of the air travel from South America. Now, he said, my dad used to have a saying, you can't stop heroin. He'd always say that to me. He'd say, son, you can't stop heroin. And I was surprised to find, you know what, my dad was right. You can't stop heroin. Now, and looking back, I wish I would have listened to him more on certain things. I feel like I should have called my book Hindsight's 2020. Therefore, things I wish I would have known.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate the time, Mr.
Thank you,
Mr. Bush.
Seth. Thank you. But there are people that say, you know, part of the reason why you got into politics was to restore the Bush family name. You've always kind of been the family enforcer. Does it bother you that you've really have tarnished your family's name for probably a couple generations?
Well, you know, that may be the case. But I feel like, you know, in 50 years, I hope that my family name will be vindicated. And I'm almost certain that in 100 years it will be.
And I'd like to stick up for George for a second here, because it ain't about the tarnish, it's about the garnish. And I'll tell you, he garnished that Bush family fortune. I think he was. You're quite successful there, George, so we got to hand it to you for that.
You really were, George. I give you that. You did.
He was good with the garnish.
You did do good for yourself for having very limited intelligence. And I mean that in the most nicest and constructive way possible.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I mean, in a way, I hear people, by the way, I hear voices of people, you know, say, that I'm not intelligent and whatnot. But, you know, if you look at the end result, you know, hey, I made it as a two-term president and whatnot.
Not to jump to another subject, how do you reconcile, now you're a God-fearing man, you're a Christian, you believe in Jesus Christ as your Savior, how do you reconcile the fact that you executed more people while governor in Texas than the rest of the country?
I kept America safe.
Well, but it's coming out now that some of these people were utterly innocent.
Original sin.
No, in my defense, I err on the side of caution. Even if they didn't do anything, I felt like they were, they were capable of doing something.
They had the potential to do it.
Is it possible they'd do something wrong in the future? And, and if that's the case, then I believe they should be executed.
And George, you did very well taking that philosophy into foreign policy.
You did.
Well, I appreciate that.
You
very consistent man.
Well, that's what I was going for. I do believe you have to be consistent as president. I feel like I have been. I'm consistent as governor.
I would agree. Kill one, kill them all. Festus, you are on the Other Side radio program with George W. Bush. What is your question to the former president?
My question is, day after 9/11, he allowed 125 of bin Laden's family to fly out of here on a 747, and I would like to hear him explain that to the nation.
Yeah, why did you do that, Mr. President?
I think any president would have to do that if they were in that situation.
Why?
Think about this, because, you know, if Saudi Arabia, you know, if we wanted to hold them for some type of, questioning, first, it would have been rude to do to the Saudi family, and second, they control up to 40% of our stock market, and, they could basically cripple our country if they pulled their money out, and I didn't feel like it'd be a good idea to do that.
Okay. So, Mr. President, we're going to close out your interview with a gentleman by the name of Brian. He is a major fan of you and your presidency and, quite frankly, your political party. So I let the love fest begin. Brian, you're on the other side with Mr. George W. Bush.
You're disgusting. No, this show is disgusting, Glenn.
Why?
This is not funny. It's not funny at all. This is a disgusting show.
It's called satire, Brian. What's wrong with
you? Yes, no, you're calling him the president, and that's not funny whatsoever.
He's not the president?
No.
Actually, this is the president.
The president of the United States. You are a disgusting human being.
You're disgusting, Mr. President.
I say that, man, talk to the people of Albania.
I stand corrected, Mr. President.
Not a fan, after all.
Brian's not a fan of yours.
He hung up on you.
Well, you know, first of all, I'm not sure about what that is, but I do know that I hope people buy my book, Decision Points. And,
Well, Mr. President,
It feels good to be number one in America again.
Good luck in the retirement. Good luck with the prayer. And I hope we can do this again sometime.
Thanks, I appreciate having me on, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you, George W. Bush.
Take care now.
We now return to regular programming. Thank you for listening to this exclusive Pacifica Radio interview with former President George W. Bush, broadcast from KPFT on Texas Gulf Coast. Thank you, Glenn Urbach from The Other Side, engineered by Scooter. Featuring the artistic direction and vocal stylings of Troy Conrad. This has been the Inner Side Radio Program. My name is Scooter, and I'll see y'all next week.
We'll get rid of the dictator, rebuild your country, make sure all your kids go to school. We'll clean up the cities, get the sewage plants running, institute parliamentary rule. We'll bring you autonomy, senators and judges, and a shiny new blue banner. We'll bring you pride and prosperity, food in your bellies, and every home a phone, fax, and scanner. After we torture our prisoners, we'll bring you decades of peace, spiritual release, free religious expression. You can say what you want in the papers you run.